Welcome back to the podcast. John and I sit down and chat with Alistair Prentice. Alistair popped into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group just recently and started sharing images of people he meets in the streets of Northern Ireland with his pinhole camera and Holger camera. And he talks about some of the stories behind the images and the people he meets. Hello and welcome to the Lensless Podcast. It's show 143. And I'm joined this evening by John Farland, all the way from somewhere not home, and Alistair Prentice, all the way from somewhere in Northern Ireland. I hope I've got both of those right. How are you doing, both of you?
Hi, Andrew. Good evening.
Whereabouts are you, Alistair? Remind me.
Yes, so I'm from Portadown, which is about 30 miles from Belfast.
Okay. And John, where are you tonight?
I'm in Cresswell, in the northeast of England.
Oh, that's right. I knew you'd gone somewhere exotic.
Yeah, very exotic. Looking at the castle.
Have you managed to take any pinhole pictures?
Well, there's a bit of a story attached to that, but we'll do the Alistair thing first, and then I'll come back to that one.
I might not let you.
No, well, I might not. He's a Celt like me, so he might talk all night.
We'll see how it goes. Anyway, Alistair, you came to our attention really by posting into the group with pinhole portraits and Holger portraits, and so I reached out to you. And you want to tell us and the listeners a little bit about yourself?
So I'll give you the very diluted version, Andrew, because I don't want to be going on all night. But essentially, I grew up like any child of the 80s, surrounded by all the nostalgic things that we've come to recognize today. A lot of the things that are back with the Polaroids, vinyl, and what have you. But it's really the Polaroid that I think is what sort of sparked the desire with the photography. I remember seeing this little square white thing when I was growing up and asking my mum and dad, like, where did this come from? Oh, that's from a Polaroid camera. Didn't actually get seeing an operational Polaroid camera until a few years later, because mum and dad, I think theirs was broken. But I had evidence of all these Polaroids all over the roof space in the attic. And mum and dad also had 110 cameras, so I took a real passion for it, and I became kind of a family photographer when we went on holiday trips, which I took great pride in. And yeah, so any holiday or any birthday, I would be snapping away and throwing them into the chemist as quickly as I could to get the results back. It will be some years now before I would get an actual good camera, so to say. My dad got me an SLR when I was like 14, 15, and yeah, I shot a lot of film when I was younger. And then I can remember the day when I took my last photograph, which would be the Via Massive Hiatus. I was taking a photograph of my mum on the beach, outside Port Rush, and the camera just died. Obviously, sand or something got stuck in it. And despite asking my dad all the time, have you got the camera fixed yet? Have you left this camera and they get fixed yet? Because obviously, I had no money at the time. Time just ebbed by, and I never saw the camera again. So I wouldn't lift a camera again until I went to uni, where I studied media and journalism. And yeah, did the qualification there, and we did a bit of darkroom work, developed our own films, which I really did enjoy at the time. But because I came from a predominantly pro journalism background, I think it was sort of expected of me to follow the newspaper route. So I threw myself into newspaper journalism and did work experience on a newspaper. So the photography once again took a back seat. But of course, when you go to university, there's a lot of hedonism, drink, women and stuff. Everything just, I think just in my late 20s, everything was just work and relationships and stuff. And again, photography wouldn't really come along again until sort of mid-20s. And I was a keen fisherman as well, really fond of nature. And started to take the camera along and take photographs of, you know, all the nature and stuff that I'd see by the riverbank. And then one day I got a letter through the door saying that one of the investments I'd been putting money inside, one of these sort of Scottish friendly or something like that, but I'd actually lost a lot of money. And so I rang and said, I want to cash this policy out. I went out and spent the money on a 500mm lens and Pentax camera to do bird photography. So bird photography was what I did. I was really passionate about for a good, it would have been 3 or 4 years. And I spent all my time, including weekends, stuck in hides or bushes, photographing all sorts of a menagerie of animals, otters, kingfishers, and what have you. So people and portraits.
Alistair, are we still in the days of film or digital?
No, sorry, this was digital, sorry.
Yeah, right.
So,
okay.
So we lifted I think it was a Pentax KX and then a Bobby K5.
Right.
Anyway, that's what I did for 3 or 4 years. I was addicted to it. I was sort of like, the bird watchers talk about their ticks. I was ticking these things off every time I photographed them. But I was spending an inordinate amount of time on my own and quickly discovered, hang on a second, I'm not meeting up with friends and not spending time with family. And that's when I thought I needed to try something different. So I was going through some photography books and I always wanted to try portraiture. And I thought, this is getting a bit insular. I'm spending too much time on my own, which I'm fond of doing. I'm fond of my own company, but I wanted to push myself. So I think the portraiture, especially the street photography, was kind of about me becoming more confident within myself. I wanted to give it a go. And so I started to do street photography. Now, street photography is a lot of YouTube as being this. Here's top 10 things of how to do street photography. Street photography is actually a really hard thing to be A, good at, and be confident to do. So I threw myself into it. I quickly discovered that it was much more hazardous. I had cameras broken. I had people spitting up me, people shouting at me. So one day I decided, why don't I actually just talk to the people and ask for their portrait? And that's kind of how it got started. There's a guy sat outside Belfast City Hall, flesh tunnels, and all this jewellery in his nose. And I think if he had said no to me, I probably would have just packed it in there and then. But I walked up and I said, hey, I like your look. Can I take your portrait? And he said, yes. And I've been doing that for 15 years now.
So you started doing it with your digital kit, I presume, did you?
A bit of both, Andrew. I used a few film cameras in the beginning as well. Olympus XS, Minolta AFS I had as well. That's one of the talkie ones. I don't know if you can remember those.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a Holga. I had a few cameras. They're always knocking around, but I leaned towards digital because I just didn't have the confidence at the time, to say, hold on a second, I need to take a light reading, or I need to put you over here to get the light. And I just wanted to ask, and as soon as I got a yes, I was snapping away. As time went on and my confidence grew, that's when I reintroduced film back into the street portraits. Okay. So my workflow at the moment is probably 70% film. And all the projects that I'm working on are all Pinhole and Holga.
So when did Pinhole wander into your repertoire?
So I actually sent a request to a chap today to join the group, Mark Doxey. A few sort of like-minded photographers had told me about this guy, Mark Doxey. He was a bit of a guru when it came to Pinhole photography. And so I messaged him and said I was very keen to try it out. And he said, no problem, I will give you one of my Pinhole cameras and we'll give it a shot. Now, I've got to say from the get-go, I didn't really get on very well the first time out with the Pinhole camera. Mark and I went around County Armagh and he gave me the Holga Wide, which is the one I'm still using today. And I remember he was telling me, Mark was saying, so it's a wide Pinhole camera.
Hello.
Oh, I think we've lost Alistair.
Okay. Well, we'll take a short break.
That should be it now. Yeah.
Hey. Is he back? Is he back?
Yeah, back now. So it's just explain there. So Mark Doxey seemed to have this arcane knowledge of, oh, this is 10 seconds or this is 20 seconds. So I never really got any great photographs. I double exposed a few. Some came out too underexposed. So I kind of just said, yeah, that's not really for me. So pinhole photography, I tried it out. It didn't really quite work. And I just went back to shooting regular film again. But fast forward, actually just as recent as maybe just a year ago, I had my Holga and I went back out with the Holga, shot a few rolls through it, and instantly fell in love with that kind of whimsical Lo-Fi look again. And that's when I decided, you know what, I'm just going to try this pinhole thing again because I think it'll complement the Holga very well. I need a project to work towards, otherwise I'm just shooting random things. And after my first exhibition, which was called Street Strangers in Northern Ireland, I was searching for a new project. And then one day I was walking around and I thought pinholes and portraits. And for the last 3 months, I've been basically driving around Northern Ireland and choosing, you know, doesn't matter where it is, doesn't have to be an affluent area, it doesn't have to be a big area, could be the countryside, could be a city. Doing a nice pinhole and then shooting someone within that environment. I'm sure you've seen some of the photographs.
You're scouting for locations. So are you finding a location then, finding someone you want to photograph and taking them there? Or are you hanging around said location and waiting for someone to pop in?
It's a bit of both, Andrew. Good question. It's a bit of both. So, for example, the recent portrait is of a lady that worked in Mulligan's, No Meath, which is just over the border in Ireland. And she is the daughter, so it's a family-run business. And she didn't want to do the photograph, but I managed to coax her out and say, listen, I'm using a very old camera. The great thing about pinhole cameras, guys, as I'm sure you know, people seem to really gravitate towards, oh, what's this thing that you're using? You know, this doesn't look like a regular camera. So I'm getting a lot more yeses when I ask for portraits with the pinhole.
Okay.
And just as much actually with the Holga, you know, because the Holga is so garish and plasticky looking and they can't believe it's an actual camera. Some people actually think that the Holga is a, you know, it is a toy camera, but it's not a real camera and I'm just simply clicking and not actually getting any photographs. So that quirkiness has really helped me sort of win people over to get the yeses. But yeah, to go back to your point, Andre, yes, some of the people that I've stopped and taken portraits of on the street, I've said, you might be good for an idea down the line. Can I maybe contact you in the future? I find somewhere that I can maybe photograph you. So That's kind of where that comes from. So,
yeah, I mean, I've not gone to that extreme, I have to say. I mean, I've been taking Holga portraits of folks in the streets for 10 years or more, but mostly it's happen chance, you know, where you stumble upon them. And it struck a chord what you said about the Holga sort of being a low barrier. I was in Cambridge one day and there's a really interesting chap looking chap anyway, I have no idea what he was like really, and he was a bus inspector. And he'd got a bicycle hat on top of his woolen hat and a big high vis coat on. And I started talking to him and said, you know, can I take your portrait? And he was very reluctant to start with. And then I just brought out the Holga and said, well, I'm just using this. He said, oh, that's a Holga. And he worked in a camera store years and years ago, you know, and he was much more, he was immediately engaged when he knew it was a film camera. And was very happy to pose.
Yeah,
John, did you have a question, John, about the Mulligan's picture? Because it's one of the recent ones that, or maybe not you, someone sent a question in to the podcast.
It's an absolute belter of a picture. I don't think there was someone asked specifically about that one, but they have asked, you know, about Gary Owens, a recent guest on here as well. He says he really loves your work. I'd be interested to know whether using a Holga N or a pinhole changes the relationship between you and your sitters in the portraits, and how does the end result differ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. starting with the Hulga, first of all, I tell him that it's a toy camera, mm-hmm. and I have to make a few adjustments. I actually, this is some of the sort of trade secrets now, I'm actually taking shots of them while I'm telling them that I'm getting ready.
Yep.
So I, certainly in my experience, the first photograph is generally the one that I'll go with.
Absolutely.
Because it's kind of like that snap reaction.
Yeah.
The looks that you get from people as time goes on tend to get a bit contrived or a bit, sort of lose interest.
Yeah.
That first second or two is what I'm after, and that's usually what I go with.
Yeah.
As regards the pinhole camera,
mm-hmm.
that's an interesting one as well, because I've only just started doing this, but I would say it's very similar to maybe like a 19th century painter. I'm asking the person to stay really stock still.
Yeah.
And I can get, it's wonderful because you can get anyone of any age or description to basically stand there like a mannequin because they think that they have to keep really, really still. When in actual fact, the actual exposures on a good, 5 seconds. And what's also interesting, I must say, is I wasn't really fond of the pinhole portraits that I took in the beginning with the test rolls. I think the sweet spot for me personally, sharp's a bit of a misnomer, but I don't want the person to be too blurry. I want you to be able to see some sort of facial expression.
Yeah.
So 5 seconds, 5-7 seconds is as far as I would go. But I'll ask the person to stare straight into the middle of the camera and keep really, really still on them.
Yeah.
They don't speak or anything, I kind of have them under my power, So
that's not easy. I mean, I know I've stood for a wet plate. When it was 12 seconds.
Wow.
It was 12. And I mean, my face is still sharp, but one of my eyes started to droop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy. It's it's very difficult to stand still for that length of time. I get what you're saying there about the photographs, the first one, being a street photographer, right, and also stopping people in the street. I will also take that as that first. I only usually take one shot anyway, but it's usually a shot before they start to basically kind of go into photographing mode, right?
Yes,
being photographed.
Yeah.
Well, when they say to me, "What do you want me to do?" I go, "Just." Do whatever you would normally be doing, as if I'm not.
Yeah.
Just look at you.
Yeah.
Now, and then when it just doesn't look at me, because they'll go, "Huh?" You click. There you go. That's done.
And it's very hard to articulate this. You kind of know what I'm getting at, John. Yes. But when I publish a photograph or when I use a photograph, I in sort of the Instagram days, we're flicking through, so many photographs. I just want someone to look that little bit longer. And I want to get a certain look. It's very hard to get that look. And there are days that you don't simply get any of them, But what I really love about the pinhole portraits is, for some reason, I really like the 6x12. I don't know what it is, but I really like, I think it's the perfect negative size for the environmental portrait.
Yeah.
I just really love it.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. The wide, I'm a wide shooter. Everything I own just about is extremely wide and panoramic. Mm-hmm. And the width of the 2x1 is brilliant because it's tight enough to get
stuff
without losing them, but it's not tight enough to exclude what's round about them.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, there's so much serendipity when it comes to photography. I'm probably more so of a pinhole because the light can change. This particular day of the lady outside the corner house, Mulligan's, we're talking really bright light. So that exposure was only 2 seconds.
I can see
But a couple just pulled up that were doing a bike track across Ireland. So you can see their bikes outside. And a van was to the left-hand side. And I had literally just pinholed the father and daughter with their ice creams on the bench. I'll be posting that one when I get it developed. But there was so much happening, and all of a sudden I had this perfect composition, and Frances agreed to stand, and she said, "Where do you want me to stand?" And I said, "Right here." I've noticed as times went on, I'm probably favouring too much foreground. You can see that I missed a bit of the top, so I need to try and get that camera sort of raised a wee bit, you know. But as I say, I'm very much in the infancy stages of doing this, and from a technical point of view, I'm still getting this strange halation and aberration across the top of the frame, but I think it's possibly bubbles or something like
it's
that.
It's bubbles. But, I can see it. It's absolutely bubbles. If you're wanting to get more above them and less below them, you do need a rise pinhole. That will totally revolutionize your photography if you go.
All right, okay, I'll look into that, John. Yeah,
straight middle to a rise. I shoot near enough exclusively on a rise pinhole.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Alistair. I'll send you my Reality So Subtle 6x6. Sorry,
all right,
6x12. 6x12 rise pinhole camera. So it's
What essentially does that mean? You have an option to have a higher hole.
Yeah, so you don't you don't have a hole in the middle. Mm-hmm. You have typically one towards the top and one towards the bottom. And on James Guerin's cameras, if you go onto the Reality So Subtle site, for example, you'll see he's got two little sliders, and there's a hole that's uncovered on the top third of the film.
And
a hole on the bottom. So if you wanted to eliminate too much foreground and you wanted more sky in the picture, then you're using the top pinhole, John. That's right, isn't it?
That is right, yep.
Yeah, it's fairly obvious when you think about it. So more sky.
Oh, that's right, Ken, Andrew. So, can I just say as well, I have to shout out to Will Gudgeon and Andrea, because I'm using Andrea's prototype camera at the moment. And Will's the guy that sent me the camera that I used for the earlier portraits. I've got to say, the Mia stuff is very good. It must be a Reality So Subtle pinhole because it's very, very sharp.
Andrea, isn't it, Mia?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast. We do occasional spotlight features of manufacturers, and he's a lovely mm-hmm. chap. I'll get your details later and box that up and send it to you. You can have a play with that. It's you'll have fun loading it, but you'll find there's no light fall off across the frame because it's a curved plane, and the film winds around in a sort of semicircle. The distance from the pinhole to the film plane remains. Mm-hmm. Pretty much constant as it swings around.
That's amazing, Andrew. Thank you. That's very. I have to say, everyone in this forum is very friendly. Can you also send me 20 rolls of film as well?
No, that's one thing I can't do. I can barely afford to buy my own.
Yeah,
John might better afford to send it to you. He's well off.
Well, talking about film and reality So Subtle cameras, and it's not a camera; it's the film. Redox relaunched they launched it for the first time in 120, the CMS 100.
Mm-hmm.
Do not attempt to load that into the camera. I consider myself, I would say, pretty expert at loading the cameras, and I couldn't load it. I lost my first roll. It sprung like a coil. I've never seen anything like it. It's as if it just snapped a wound up coil. And then I tried it again and I gave up. So I've put a little post out to ADOX to say what the, and seriously, look at
this. Is that the film base, that one of those modern, really hard, plasticky bases? That
it's a very hard base, but the paper itself actually, Andrew, springs back. See, like you know how the little flap that you fold under? See if you try to curl that round and then let go of it, it literally springs back.
Okay.
So I've normally you have to put your finger on it to catch it. It's kind of common with rounded cameras like this 6x12, 6x17s by any of the manufacturers. You need to hold on to it, or there's a gap where you pull it round and then you let go of one part and then your finger goes on to the other part to stop it. I didn't even get that time. It was within a tenth of a second the whole roll exploded. So on Instagram, you look at it. I've never seen it. Sorry, I digressed there, but it was because you mentioned.
Well, no, I mean, I know people do have different experiences with different film film because they're, you know, the either different backing paper or different base material. I mean, I have to say, for my pinhole photography, when I started with my now resurrected Zero 2000 camera that I'm staring at, and I pretty much only ever put HP5 in it, and I use the Force as well as your friend Mark, but I've mentioned this before on the show, but I've got the Zero 2000 instruction book. Just it this was in the days before really the internet and also Pinhole Assist app on your phone, and all it said in here, it says when the and this is with any film, right? They didn't say, oh, this is for 100 speed film or 400. It says when the exposure is 2 to 4 seconds, multiply it by 2. When the exposure time is 4 to 10 seconds, multiply it by 5. When the exposure time is 50 seconds or over, multiply by 12. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, that seems a real generalization, but with both FP4 and HP5, which were basically the two films I used for years and years and years, I just used to apply those rules and got some great results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, now you can just point your Pinhole Assist app at things, and it gives you the magic times.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
If you're lucky, mm-hmm. yeah. So, I think one of the Rise pinhole cameras where you can include more sky or more foreground, would be perfect for this sort of picture, because that building's really interesting. Whether or not you have Francis stood in front of it or not, I just want to see more of that building, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just want to, as much as I know what you're doing here, but I just want to push her out of the way. I want you to get closer and show me more of that
building. As time goes on, I mean, as I said earlier, Andrew's very much in the infancy stages of this project. Mm-hmm. For example, I mean, initially I thought it'd be nice to have the pinhole of the landscape of the environment and then a portrait of the Hulga with the Hulga. But as time goes on, I'm actually really enjoying exploring just how much I can get in the frame with the pinhole.
Test
the patience of everyone in North Ireland, you know, to see how long they can stand. I'm also going to probably, as time goes on, ask people to choose their favourite chair, because I'm knocking on doors as well. I'm going around wee villages, knocking on doors and saying, I love your house, can you come outside and sit in your favourite seat? That's literally what I'm doing.
Love it. You seem to be, sorry, John, you seem to be a Delta 100 man for pinhole and an HP5 man for the Holger.
Those were the films that I used back in the day. I do like Kent Beer as well, but it just depends on how much salary you have per month. You know? HP5 is terrific because you can do so much with it. And as for Delta, I mean, a lot of people say, oh, they all look the same. I kind of got used to this Delta look and I just know how to develop the film. And I haven't changed how I've developed from day one. When I was learning, it was always Rodnell, agitate, you know, get consistency that way. So that's what I've always done, you know.
Quite right, too, as anyone will bore anyone to death on getting familiar with one film and one developer. Mm-hmm. But if you want to avoid the blur altogether, of course, you could just use HP5 for everything. And then you're down to, in that bright light conditions, probably, you know, no more than a second.
Well, as I say, I'm still learning, Andrew. Like, I mean, if I use the HP5 400, what kind of... I'm going to get more grain, obviously, aren't I? Yeah.
You're going to get more fingers.
Not so you'll worry, yeah. Second or so under those lighting conditions, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I used, in that camera I'm going to send you, I took it to the Barbican in London once and I had Delta 3200 in there. And the exposure times were supposed to be about 0.3 of a second or something, but I just opened and closed. I just opened and closed the pinhole, and they were fine.
How do you avoid fingers, Andrew? Because at that kind of speed, I always get my fingers in.
Well, I don't have my fingers anywhere near it because, you know, well, why would you?
Oh, do you use a bit of card?
No, with James's camera.
Yeah,
I have my finger over where the hole is as I pull the shutter over.
Yeah.
And then I just take the finger out of the way and put the finger back again.
Hmm.
But so at that sort of speed, I mean, I always get my fingers in.
No, you're not moving your fingers fast enough, are you, clearly?
Honestly, it's like...
You must have big Scottish meaty fingers.
I've got huge fingers.
I wouldn't recommend Delta 3200 in a pinhole camera. I've no idea why I put it in there, but bright sunny day with 100 speed film, it's fine, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
I will try
your Delta 100 speeds film was fine. It's whatever you're happy and comfortable with, you know, and folks can hold still for 5, 6, 7 seconds easily enough, can't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Delta gives you a nice curve, you know, it's got a good bit of contrast as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely a leak in a film. It's got nice contrast, but the grain's maybe just a wee bit lacking for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to use Acros all the time. I barely touch it. And the reason for that is because I just find it too smooth. I prefer a wee bit of life in the photo, but Delta's a good balance because it has a wee bit of grain over Acros, which doesn't. Can I ask you a question about your tripod, right? Now, it's a tiny tripod most of the time. I mean, it goes up no more than about 16 inches or something like that. Actually on the ground. What height are you shooting from?
So that's another interesting question. It's one I haven't really thought of before. I'm using a standard tripod. It's one of those CNF or whatever that company is.
Yep.
And I know a lot of people say shoot really low, but I prefer to have it waist height.
Mm-hmm.
So generally all the photographs that you'll see are the camera's kind of sort of thigh height, above knee sort of height. And I've kind of just stuck with that. And that includes all the landscapes as well. So my tripod I can actually collapse, but I don't like that low perspective. I prefer to see things on a neutral plane.
Well, I think for the work you're doing, having a higher tripod is perfectly perfectly the right thing to do, isn't it? Really, you don't want to be.
Yeah.
It's not like you're photographing things low on the ground, really close up. You know, which a lot of folks will do. You're doing something different. We've had a number of guests on the show over the years who've done pinhole portraits. I should have done a bit more research, but hey, you know, you can dive back into the archives.
Absolutely.
There's
what I have. What I have noticed, Andrew, is with the tripod, sorry to interrupt, is that as I'm going to be doing a lot of seascapes, people possibly in beach, coastlands, so there's obviously going to be a lot more wind and stuff. So I've noticed that the camera shakes quite a bit. So I'm going to have to start really weighing it down with something heavy, you know, the little hook underneath the main mount.
If you're on the beach as well and you're looking at longer exposures, you probably find that when the tripod legs start sinking in the sand, if you're not careful as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Beer cans, mate. Just find them on the beach and put them underneath it. Flatten them and put it under, and away you go.
Yeah.
If you don't have the special things, but they're a bit funky when you're carrying them about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask another question that's come in from the group, and it's about working with Holger and Pinhole on the project, because you spoke about projects there. And how you like working projects, and you know, it kind of keeps you going. The Holger with this one came in from Vincent Sebastian, right? So working Holger and Pinhole on the project, the Holger with a glass lens gives a sharp image versus the softness of the pinhole scene image. Was that a choice from the beginning of the project, or did the length of the exposure to shoot portraits giving probable movement to the person determining camera choices? Faster films have also been a good choice for the two cameras. It's very observational there, but there is a question in there, you know, as well about
absolutely get that. The reason why I stuck with the Holger that I have is because it's the one I've always had. I think it was Martin Henson who got that name right. I basically did the same DIY job on it. You know, basically I took the camera apart and I flopped it, painted it 3 or 4 times with matte black paint.
Mm-hmm.
I took the front element off and I put 2-inch foam inside where the shutter mechanism is. So my Holger is completely light proof. I mean, I've shot it so many times now. So I kind of, because I've invested so much time in this Holga, I kind of like using it. Mm-hmm. I could probably use a glass lens, but you know, it wasn't deliberate. I happened to be using the same Holga that I've always had. But I always say to people, you know, what camera should I use, or how do I become a great photographer? The Holga 120N is, in my opinion, makes you a better portrait photographer, because you have to find the light. Unless you're shooting, as you did in London, and I'll do a 3200 speed film. But generally, if you're shooting 400 speed film for portraits, you need to find the light. And once you find the light, it's all about just nailing that composition and getting a good connection with the person you're shooting. So I love shooting the Holga.
Are you always, with your Holga, are you always using the same rough distance? I mean, with my portraits, I put it on the closest distance, which is about a meter. I'm about that distance in front. And I just move, when I'm looking through the viewfinder, with that person about a meter in front of me, I then just move it up and slightly to the left, just to take into account.
Parallax.
But I know my sweet spot on my camera, which I've had mine since 2012. I've done none of those modifications to it at all, and it's perfectly. I've never had a Holga that leaks light ever, and I get a beautiful, sharp sweet spot at that. You know, I know where to hold the Holga in front of someone's face, basically. So, are you doing it? Are you just so used to it now that you?
I can't ever recall having the, you know, oh, that wasn't sharp. I just kind of know. I think I just know automatically now, you know. To be honest, I have actually tried deliberately shooting, you know, for example, on the large group of people when the person's maybe 3 or 4 feet in front of me. And to be honest, there's not much of a difference when the light's good, really, you know. But the Holga, I have to say, I'm really falling in love with it again, especially in fashion assignments. There's a few modelling things I've done. And again, I've asked the models, what are your favourite photographs? And I'll give them a batch folder of edited digital files. And then I'll give them some film. And everyone's saying, I love the film ones. So, you know, it just goes to show you that you can have all the money in the gear, but it just comes down to getting the upload. And sometimes it can come from a £5 Holga back in the day.
Yeah. Tell us about the Goth wedding photographs that you shared with that, because they were Holga HP5.
Yeah, so Suze and Cameron are both street portraits. Those are basically girls that I've stopped in the street and said, like your look. Cameron was wearing, she had dreadlocks on and some sort of goth apparel, and I asked her if I could take her portrait, and I asked her at the time, just as I said at the start of the interview, if I ever have an idea, would you be interested in doing some more photographs? Yes. And Suze, the other lady, said the same. So I've done a couple of assignments with people that I know are reliable, that will turn up on time, and I've shot the Holga extensively for those two ladies, and they're really, really chuffed with photographs. So
that's a really good idea, to sort of get their consent to come back and do it again, you know, at another opportunity. I've never, can't say I've ever done that. Have you ever done that, John?
No, I find it where we are and work with what I've got. I never take it any further than that.
No, me neither.
I do send
them prints, though. I make prints in the darkroom and send them in the post, and I've had some lovely feedback when I've done that.
Yeah, only if people ask. I mean, the one thing I always tell people I take a picture of in the street, if it's like that, is I will not profit from it. I will use it on my website, but I will not profit from any sales.
Yeah.
Those images. Yeah. It's a line I do never cross over, because I don't think it's right. If someone's nice enough to do that for you, you know, then you should respect it. You know, it's
absolutely. Yeah. But that first photograph that I posted, guys, is a perfect example. Samantha was she's the embodiment of the 80s goth scene.
Yeah,
lovely girl from Ballymena. I found this wonderful petrol pump station, and I asked the lady, she owned the house to the right of frame. She said that was my father's petrol station. And he worked on it every day right up until his retirement. And she's basically looking after it since her father's deceased. So I asked for permission. So I kind of had to bring someone to this particular location. As fortunate as I've been in the past with serendipitous moments, it's very hard to find a goth punk outside Ballymena and Pavlov Station. So sometimes you have to. That's kind of why I revisit. I have a list of people and a list of places, and I'm kind of working through it. So that's what this project's all about. My first exhibition was all digital. I want this to be all out analog, the way I wanted it to be years ago when I was imagining all these wonderful things that I wanted to do. I'm going to try and do it in the next few years. So that's kind of my goal.
I totally get you, Brian. I mean, if it seems set up and, you know, you've taken somebody there, then there could be an agreement between the two of you to say, like, you know, this is what I've got to do with it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Street work, very different, you know. It's a,
But there will be a little bit of the street portrait up, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not all going to be composed deliberately and set up. There will be some haphazard moments, you know. Would you mind standing here? I want to take a portrait. And I have to say, I haven't had any no's yet. It's all been very positive. So long may it continue.
Yeah, I tell people that as well. You get very few no's when you ask someone. You know, all you need is a smile and a cheeky camera. You know, and you'll generally get a yes.
A cheeky smile's wrong.
Yeah, a cheeky camera in your hand. You know, as long as the camera looks a bit cheeky, you know, you're always there. And a smile in your face, you know, it goes
on. Absolutely.
I mean, I kind of stole about the East End of Glasgow, getting photos of people. And as we know, East End's a city, East End to be more industrial, and the people tend to be a bit kind of put it easier to work with, but they've got more character. About them, you know, and I'm sure you know exactly what I mean. I've never,
I'm looking forward, John, to going to the Barrowlands. I'm looking forward to doing Glasgow. I was supposed to go to Glasgow this year, but I couldn't get cheap flights, so I intend to go there soon. So,
and the Barrows is good, you know, it's always changing. You know, if you're up there, there's the old guard who've been there for decades, and then you've got the new. You know, kind of hip and trendy types that are coming in, but they will.
So, hang on, just stop. Both of you, stop, because you're going. You're whatever alleyway you're going down. I've no idea what you're talking about. And so you're talking about? I think you said Barrows or Burrows or something. Is that an area of Glasgow?
It is. Yeah, it's in the slightly to the east of Glasgow.
And how do you spell it?
The Barrows. The Barrows. It's like a barrel.
Barrows.
Okay. It's Barras. The Barrows.
I have seen that term before. Yeah. Okay. What's the history? What's the history of it then?
Well, the history is 1920? What year are we on? 1924. So it would have been 1923. A lady set up a stall down there, and then it kind of worked from there. So yeah. That's the kind of history of it. But it's always been a kind of rough and tumble kind of area of people selling their wares. We used to have Paddy's Market in Glasgow as well, Andrew. And my vivid memories from Paddy's Market are people selling false teeth on the ground and planting shawls. You know, it was as rough as they come. So when they shut that down, a lot of the people moved into the Barrows. And a lot of the traders are still there. You know, it's a great place for pictures with a lot of people with character. I take a lot of shots down there and street shots.
That's kind of what I'm after. That's what I'm after, John, you know.
Yeah, give me a shout.
Look really, Alistair. Absolutely, absolutely great.
Thought about with you, as we say.
Brilliant,
So it's great for everything, Andrew. It's a great photography place. I'm sorry if you didn't know what it was there, mate, but you can look it up.
I will do.
Look it up, and it's a great place to go for street shots.
Okay.
And pinhole, because it's got lovely architecture around there as well, and interesting stalls.
So, do you think you're going to stick, Alistair, with the sort of 6x12 format? Because you did post back in a month or so ago that you'd bumped into these tourists somewhere by some falls. Glen O Waterfalls near Larn.
Yeah.
And you obviously had your 0 6x6 with you. So that presents different set of challenges.
It does, yeah. Although, I don't know, I just seem to really prefer the 6x12 at the moment. You have to get close. Mm. And as a street portrait photographer, you know, invariably you're going to be close.
Yeah.
I don't like to be too far away. I think with 6x6, I love 6x6, you know, but you have to choose your composition a lot more methodically. You have to sort of think about what's going to be in the foreground, what am I going to have in the background. Whereas with 6x12, it's sort of in your face. This is where the person resides, or this is where the person lives. So yeah, as time goes on, I may chop and change things a little bit. As I say, I'm very much in the sort of infancy stages of this. You must remember as well, guys, I'm a color photographer. This is all new to me. I didn't think I could see in black and white. I'm really enjoying black and white, but predominantly I'm a color shooter. Like my favorite photographers are Saul Leiter and William Eggleston.
Yep.
So to shoot black and white, I'm kind of going back to one of my other favorite photographers, which is Dionne Arbus. I really like her 6x6 work. I'm going to try the 0-2000, but I think I'm going to probably go to wide. So.
Well, when John's talking to you and asking a few more questions in a minute, I'm just going to go back and look at our previous guest list, because we had someone on the show who did portraits using his 6x6 0-2000. That's it. Sorry. And what I loved about them was that he'd got his subject bang in the middle of the camera, you know.
Yeah.
And they were just so dramatic. There was a very constant look to them contained within the square image. It's different to what you're doing, but it's it worked equally as well. But I like the idea of sticking with a format and working with it. I do like that idea a lot. On the subject of color, I'm flattening a fiber print on my desk at the moment, and I've got my computer on top of it. Three of the books I've got on here. One is Modern Color by Fred Herzog. I don't know if you've got that. That's just superb. Mm-hmm. I've got this book here, which I haven't properly read yet. It's an ex-library book that got shipped from America. It's called Color Rush, and I know it's American because they spell color wrong. And it American color photography from Steiglitz to Sherman. So that's really good. And then also there is Stephen Shaw's Uncommon Places. So all good stuff. And
absolutely,
I've got quite a lot of books, sort of lighter stuff as well. Have you seen his DVD, the 13 lessons?
I haven't seen the whole thing. I've just seen excerpts on YouTube, but I've read some of the books. Great photographer.
The other book that came fairly recently was Harry Gruyer, I think you pronounce it.
Another fantastic photographer.
Gruyert.
Yeah.
And the book I've got is called Between Worlds. Mm-hmm. And he's shooting he's making pictures of boundaries between like doorways through glass, lots of reflection. So there's a lot of crossover with stuff that Saul Leiter was doing.
Absolutely.
And it's these very vibrant deep reds, you know, almost like he was using Kodachrome from years ago, like Fred Herzog did in Chicago and places like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And incidentally, just talking about color, the reason why I'm not using color is because it's down to money, which I think was filmed. You know, as film photographers, we all realize that it's very expensive. The C41 process is a little bit more awkward, but I just wanted a new challenge, and I'm really enjoying the mono look, to be honest.
Do you think it's a wee bit more awkward?
I thought that was like a red rag to a bull list when you mentioned it to John. You keep talking while I dig back in the records.
Yes, C41, Alistair, you know, do you think a bit more awkward?
Well, I was with a friend in Dublin, a friend Jim Leonard, and he took me through the process, and he actually managed to bang out some films while making an Irish fry up and making me cups of coffee, so it can't be that difficult. But I think it was the whole process. He had the cine still water heater. It just looked very like something of the, you know, you're back in chemistry in school again, you know. So I just prefer at the moment the express kind with which I can sort of turn the Delta and the HP fiber. And, is that, by the way, John, is that your photograph that I liked and commented on the Borders one in Actar 100. Was that your photograph?
Borders.
Did you post it? Or...
Let's see. He'll take credit for it, whether it was his
I saw a great photograph this morning. I think it's 8 Banner, is that right? No.
Yeah, 8 Banner. Yeah, I did a couple.
Yeah, that's a cracker photograph. Yeah, yeah, I love that. Love that.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah. So that's the one in Glasgow, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
That's cracker,
much.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, it's that's me on the ground, basically, there, as usual. With my tiny tripod. That was my first kind of run through with the 8 Banner with that format. 6-12 is it's a bit of an alien format to me, even though I'm a wide lock shooter. The 6-12 is a bit of it's a weird format.
There's really nice geometry to that. There's so many lines and the contrast is nice.
Yeah, they've done really well with building that area and putting it together, you know, and it's very photographic for very much. I do a lot of architectural photography, and that really, you know, it caught my eye there, which is great. But
that's a cracker.
So I have been doing C41 more recently, right? One, because I can get 35 millimeter film cheaper, right? Because I just buy it in bulk. So you buy like 500T and roll it up, and it costs about £6 a roll, right? Which is significantly cheaper than if you're buying, you know, any other film, and then you just rub it and jet off. So it's dead easy to work with. But I find the C41 process so easy. You know, it's a few minutes, you know, and as long as you keep it the temperature. And I've found that there's not even that. See if you think you've made a mistake, you can correct it just like you can with black and white in development, as long as you're used to using it. If you're not used to using it, you would probably have a panic attack and just give up. But if you're used to it, you know, and you can see something go wrong, you can make corrective changes on it, and everything's the same time. So there's no there's a different time to HP5, it's just all the same time.
Yeah,
it's quite economical as well. Not as economical.
No, I'll definitely give it a go. As I said, my friend Jim, he banged a couple of films out in between cooking me breakfast and giving me a cup of coffee. So
it's worth a try. You get a two for one, because you get a colour image and then you get a black and white image. Should you?
Absolutely. There's always that too. Yeah.
You know, so
you can double up that way.
It is. It's quite new to me using it a lot, but I have been using it a lot recently. I do love. Seeing colour images again. I've even been processing chrome films in HC110, re-exposing them, and then exposing them and doing them in the C41. Andrew's just messaged to say he thinks he's lost me. I can hear you. It's me and you're off. He's away.
Yeah. He's gone, He's gone.
It's him. He'll probably need to start it again, and he's totally broke. Hold on a second, and I'll message him back. Because it's usually me it keeps dropping off, but it's Andrew this time. But yeah.
So, John, have you done any portraits yourself with your pinhole?
No. No, I don't think I have. Hello.
Hi,
we're back. We're
just waiting. Yes, we are back. Sorry about that. That's my fault. You may have been carrying on chatting.
You were blethering away.
So, hello. Sorry.
Okay, back again.
There'll be a very professional break inserted.
I thought you had just started reading under and thought the hell this.
No, it was actually my fault. I'd gone back into try and find the chap I was talking about. And then I inadvertently hit play, and an old episode of the Lensless Podcast started playing. I thought, I don't know. And then I stopped it, and I went back into to try and re-talk to you guys, and I couldn't hear anything, so I had to cease the recording. So we'll wind the recording up over the next five or 10 minutes. So, but John, I don't know where you'd got to.
We were talking about C41 and I found it quite easy. Mm-hmm. And Alistair's going to give it a try. It's just about keeping the temperature, Alistair. Just keep it as consistent as you can. Heat the chemicals up. Heat the film up as well. Make sure your canisters are warm, right?
And yes. I noticed Jim had said that. He was heating them up, first of all.
If you don't, you will drop about 2 degrees when that water goes in, the chemicals go in there, and that will mean you will have to extend it, but you won't notice it unless you're monitoring it.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to make sure everything's at the same temperature. You can heat it up with water, as long as it's the right temperature. Some people say do not put water in C41. I'm a great believer in it. That's rubbish. My films come out okay. Andrew, what say of thee on that one?
I've done both, to be honest.
Yeah.
When I'm developing, if I've got a number of colour pictures, colour films to develop, and I've got the Jobos set up, then I've got the tank and the films warming up for 5 minutes or so, dry, you know, but the tank is warming up. Today I developed one roll of film in the kitchen sink, in a washing up bowl, using Bellini chemicals for the first time, and the development time was like 3 minutes, which is, you know, fairly typical, and I had to get it to 38 degrees, and that water bath is going to stay at 38 degrees. It's not going to vary at all, really. Not enough to even begin to affect the development. So, you know, if you've put 25, 30 films through and you're up to 7 or 8 minutes, then just keep an eye on it, you know?
Yeah.
Keep an eye on it. And I just shove the tank in the same water bath in between agitations. And I don't think you need fancy Cinestill sous vide heaters. You know, you just do it in a bowl. It's fine.
Yeah, you can do that. I use the sous vide, and I find it consistent. I keep it at 30.05, always got half a degree above, just to be on the safe side. But as I say, if I think something's went wrong, I'll extend the development. I'm not precious about it. It doesn't need to be perfect. But I did get with the Bellini, I think it. In total, from the bleach and the fixer, I got, I think it was 60 rolls, Andrew. Because I changed the developer. I put in a new developer and then kept using the other chemicals. And I finally just ditched them. I thought, this is going to fail at some time. This has got to fail.
Yeah.
It just didn't seem to be getting any worse, but I thought it's just going
to fail. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't tend to put that many through. I mean, you can get, if you... In the the Technil has gone belly up, hasn't it, as a company? So I think you're going to struggle to get any chemicals from Technil now. But in the United Kingdom, you can get the Cinestill two bath kit fairly easily. I noticed earlier today that Bristol Camera are selling the powdered stuff, which I've used loads of times, for £30, and plus postage. So that's pretty good deal, and you know, you're going to get 20 odd safe images out of that, 20 odd reels and more probably if you want to keep pushing it. So you know, it's fine, and I keep all my chemicals in glass bottles with vacuum wine stoppers on and suck all the air out. So
yeah, you know, I did sorry, on you go, man.
Yeah, stuff keeps forever, you know.
Really, I do the exact opposite. I keep them in a Lidl, you know, 75 pence juice bottles, and squeeze the air out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever temperature it is in the dark room, but I suppose it's the squeezing of the air out of them that matters.
It is, yeah. Some plastics are all different, so many will absorb oxygen through through the body of the plastic. But you know, if it works for you and you're not and the results are great, well, don't worry about it, really, you know. It's just that I've got a stack of brown Winchester 1 litre bottles.
Nice.
And, you know, why wouldn't I use them, really? You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I see Bristol Camera have got HC110 back in again, which is good to see it coming back into the country.
Yeah, I've played a little bit with that. I thought I'd just used the last of my ID 11, then I found another 5-liter box in the dark room. So that's a result, because that's not really available till the end of June, I don't think, according to Ilford.
All right. Is that why everybody's bringing out D76 again?
Yeah, you can't get ID 11 for love nor money, really. Although I did see a post on eBay, a West End camera trying to sell some for £80 or something.
Oh, get away with you. Wow, that is why everybody's making their own D76s.
Yeah.
ID 11's not available. It's the same stuff, effectively, isn't it?
Broadly the same, I think. Yeah. But I've always used it, and I know what results I've fine-tuned all my developers. Most of my images are black and white. I've done with ID 11 1+1, and and the prints I make, I'm more than happy with.
Mm.
So I don't chase rainbows or pots at the end of. I did. I before I realised I'd got 5 liters stashed away. I messaged Ilford on Messenger or Instagram or something, and said that my 5-liter wine bag was empty and I didn't have any more. When was it going to be available? They said, "Oh, sorry to hear that." They said end of June. They said you can try DDX, which is the same in liquid form. Well, I don't think it is. I don't think it's the same chemicals, or I don't think it's even metal based on. But anyway, I meant to go and check, but I don't think it's the same. But DDX is just lovely. You know, I mean, I've used it for FP4 and HP5. But the thing is, I don't have a problem with using DDX or anything else, really. But it's just that I'm so familiar with ID 11, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think Alex Lux does some really lovely posts on YouTube, and he reviews pretty much every developer and film combination there is out there. And I have to say, and I've told him this before, I have to say, I look at, you know, a test he did with FP4 and Rode Null, and then he put Kentmere 100 and used Pyrocat something, and and to be honest, they all look good, you know.
There's not a bad developer out there.
They all look great.
Yeah, they're all great.
Oh, for goodness sake, I thought, you know. So yeah, don't chase the leprechaun at the end of the rainbow.
No,
I'm not at all sure it exists.
Yeah, I'm just HC110. End of story.
As many people are, yeah.
Yes, I do use other developers. There are other developers out there, and I will continue to use them, but I keep coming back to HC tomorrow because I am used to it. I know the times, I know the mixes, I know them off by the top of my head, and I just go, it gives me exactly what I expected to see when I push the shutter.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Alistair? What's your go-to? You rode it
on. I have used Rodinol from day one, John. Yeah, that's what I was taught, and I've just always stuck it. It's always available.
Mm-hmm.
It's as tough as boots. I think when I started to shoot or develop in front of a game, I think my bottle had probably sat in storage on shelf for about 5 years. It was still perfectly acceptable to use. You know, long shelf life.
Yeah,
does what it's supposed to do. I'm not one for stone developing because I'd rather be doing something. I don't see the point. When you could be just getting it done quicker,
yeah.
But it gives you consistency, and I just want to have a uniform look, you know. So, and I like green. I like the big green. So,
you definitely get the perceived sharpness from Rodinol that you don't get a lot of developers. And I noticed when I switched from Rodinol to using HC110, I had to dilute it more to give me more perceived sharpness, because I was so used to it with Rodinol and ID11. The two of them are very sharp developers, whereas HC110 tends to be a bit softer, but when you dilute it more, it gives you more, you know, is it action?
Well, yeah, ID11, when you dilute it more than 1:1, changes its nature. It starts to act more like an HC110, like a surface acting developer. So it becomes its sharpness increases, but it does change its nature. You've almost got two developers in one. If you go back and watch some of John Fincher's videos when he talks about both ID11 and Rodinol, so some very useful tips and hints and things.
I will. But the reason I stick to HC110 is because I love the tonal range it gives me. I don't think anything else that I've used comes close to it. But it could just be I like to see my images.
Yeah, I mean, I'm every role of film I'm developing is destined for the darkroom, and you know, yeah. I'm judging it by the prints, not by a scan on a screen. You know, so I'm really just taking it to that. You know, my judgment is really based on what sort of prints I'm making.
Yeah, I don't print so much, Andrew, as you know, but I like to see my negatives fit for printing when they come out. I want to be able to know for definite. I can take them into the darkroom and go, okay, I'll get a print that is what's in my head. You know, so it's. I suppose you just get used to it, don't you? For scanning, you can literally have the most undeveloped negatives you've ever seen, or the most overdeveloped negatives, and you'll still get a reasonable scan. But as we all know, that does not work in the darkroom. No. You know, it's a whole different ballgame. But yeah, I've got one more.
Well, I'm not sure I can get a decent scan from any old roll of film, I have to say. But anyway, that's just my technical ineptitude.
I'm pretty good at getting. I mean, I've got negatives you can't even see an image on, right? They're that exposed. They're accidental exposures on my KMZ FT2, right? When I'm supposed to be exposing at 1/100, and it's exposed at 1/400, and even 1/100 is chancing it. It really should be like half that speed. And, you know, it comes out 1/400. You look at it and you go, is there something on there? You put it in the scanner and you get this beautiful image. You go, whoa. Fantastic. Now, I have a question to ask you from Jimmy Hickford. I need to ask this question, right? Because Jimmy's put it up. He was the first one there. It says, bourbon or custard cream? What's your favourite?
To me? Me? Yeah.
Yeah, you
are. It's got to be custard cream for me.
Yeah. Have you tried the Marks & Spencer's ones?
No, couldn't afford them.
Mate, honestly.
The Tesco ones are just as good as the branded ones, so just stick with those.
Try them. You'll never say that again. Trust me.
We can't afford to shop at
Marks & Spencer's. They're 50 pence against
them. No, we can't afford. Me and Alistair can't afford to shop at Marks & Spencer's.
No. 50 pence? Come on.
Anyway, look, are there any more questions? Because I'm going to start winding things up, gentlemen.
No, that's it.
Alistair, you're going to carry on hand in glove with both the Pinhole and the Holger portraits.
Yeah, I think it probably will, Andrew. It'll be a Sheikha Matte, but I prefer to use the Holger, to be honest. So it'll be the Holger and the Pinholes of some description.
Once you try the Reality Pinhole 6x12 with the rise on, you might find that it opens up the new world of possibilities. So,
and that's for Canny, Andrew. I'll take you up on your offer. I'll take whatever's going. Thank you.
That's great. And John, what are you up to for the rest of the week in your holiday hideaway?
Well, I'm certainly not shooting CMS 100. And if ADOX are listening, guys, get in touch with me because I'm really happy about this. because I brought that as my film. Yes. Because I knew the weather was going to be a wee bit kind of brighter. And I thought, okay, I'll get away with 100 speed. But don't worry, I have my reliable Kodak Tri-X with me as well. So I'm all good. I will be shooting seascapes if I can. We have sea defences, big concrete blocks, out on the beach, out the back garden here, and I will be trying my hardest to get some shots of them, and maybe kick about in other places. But I've only really got panoramas with me.
So I have to say, John, whenever you do a show and you're co-hosting with me, can you just go back to where you are now, because you sound so much better. There's no random buzzing going on, so.
Andrew, we discussed this, and I told you.
I know, but I'm just outing you.
It was my neighbour's wife next door. You know,
I don't want to know what you've been doing with your neighbour's wife next door.
I can't, you know, be held responsible for the noise that she's making in there. So, you know,
there's definitely more to it than that. And so, every time you want to do a show, you're going to need to head over to the northeast coast and book into whatever place you're at now.
Oh, is that because of
anyway, Alistair? Style? Yeah, Alistair, it was lovely to have you on.
Thank you.
Do carry on posting into the Lenses podcast Facebook group. If people want to stalk you, how do they do that?
Yes, so on Instagram, it's Portraits of NI, and my Street Strangers of Northern Ireland lives on Facebook. So I also post there as well. That's kind of where the project started. It's on Facebook. So Street Strangers of Northern Ireland.
Okay, okay. That's brilliant. All right. Well, look, it's really lovely. It'll take me now because I've got a complicated bit of patching work to do on the podcast. So it won't go out tonight. It'll go out at some point. Okay. Really lovely and really inspired by your project work. So thanks, John, anyway, for your engagement and your skilled reading of the questions from our listeners.
Alistair, it's lovely speaking to you.
Oh, thank you, John. You too.
When I was asked a couple of weeks ago, someone that really impressed me coming on, and it was your work.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you.
You know, I'll forgive the fact that you're using lenses. I mean, I know Andrew.
Oh, we love Holgers here. Yeah. Corey was a great Holger fan.
Yeah,
still is, I guess.
Yeah, who's this Corey?
I don't know. Anyway, lovely to speak to you, gentlemen. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. And till next time, shall we all just say goodbye? Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. I'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, buzzy buzzing?
No.
No, it must be something in my office. It was turned on. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it's gone now. So good.
Yeah.